Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer. Today we're joined by Chef Matt Collins. Check out Matt on Instagram at Chef Collins Events and check out his website, www.chefcollinsevents.com. And definitely, are your t-shirts available on the website as well?
Yeah, they're on my, there's a tab.
All right, cool. So you got some, you just unfurled some new t-shirts on Instagram I saw. So I want to make sure people know where to buy those.
Yeah, they're pretty dope. They're only going to be available for the next couple of weeks and they're printed to order. So they're pretty exclusive.
That's sweet. I like those. So I just want to share something real quick is you and I met not so long ago through networking, et cetera. And, you know, I find that the chefs I've known in my life, as well as just restaurant staff in general, have like a very twisted sense of humor. So I definitely always enjoy my conversations and you're no different. And I don't know if this is like too soon or insensitive, but, you know, you didn't know my number. So I crank called you before and, you know, asked if you were Chef Collins, you know, and I'd attended your event and caught the coronavirus at your event. And you were a little bit freaked out by that call, I think.
Yeah, well, at first I thought you were I thought you were like someone. You have a New York phone number, which I didn't know, and I thought someone was calling me about catering at first. So I picked up, and then your voice sounded like this comedian from the show I listened to. So I thought I was getting pranked. So I got pretty stressed pretty fast, and then you changed your voice back to your good, you know. QO1, you know, the radio guy.
Nice.
From and then I was like, oh god, it's Evan. And yeah. I still didn't believe it was you for like a split second.
I was trying to channel like my early Jerky Boys, like I don't know if those tapes have made their way down to your generation or not, but
yeah. No, I'm not that young. I mean, LimeWire came out and like Metallica complained about Napster and everything when I was in like middle school.
Okay.
But I mean, I've purchased cassette tapes like before it was like this like hipster Brooklyn thing to do.
Oh, sweet. That's cool. There was a label in Brooklyn actually not so long ago that was like giving away cassette players with their releases on cassettes. It was pretty sweet. I don't know if you remember those cassette players that had like the little handle that slid out.
I've had one of those.
Yeah, those things are
dope. It broke. It shredded my, October Rust by Typo Negative cassette tape I had. And damn. So I kind of swore them off. I threw it in the garbage.
So, all right, why don't we start with music since you're talking Typo already? Like, let's just jump right into it. So you, before your career in the culinary arts, dabbled, you know, you were in the music business, basically, doing some booking, managing, playing, I think, too, right?
Yeah, very poorly. I try not to talk about the playing, but... Yeah, I kind of did. I from a young age, I was cooking, attending high school where we were cooking as well and being taught to cook and then playing in bands. And then some point when I was in college at the Culinary Institute of America, I got really involved and wanted to like kind of book shows and manage my friends' bands. And I started a record label called Mosh Records.
Nice.
Joking about a mosh pit, but it was spelled in the way that the like... heirloom salad green, so M-A-C-H-E with a little accent over the A. Nobody ever got the joke. Everyone always referred to it as Mache Records, which makes no sense, and it didn't work out too well, but it was fun while it lasted. I think I did that for like 3 or 4 years.
That's pretty sweet. So you remind me, like, one thing I thought you were going to go with, like, moshed potatoes, like maybe something you incorporate into your current repertoire.
Oh man! Yeah.
But oddly enough, like an early—I don't even know when this was. entertainment company I had that I don't even know what we were doing, but it was Eddie Yamame Entertainment. And like, that's another one that no one got. Like, actually, my Costco membership still gets sent to like Eddie Yamame Entertainment for some reason because you can't update it or whatever. So it's good stuff.
Knowing that both of us have seen the movie High Fidelity, I feel like we should have learned from like poor puns,
right?
And naming, like, Top Five Records is not a good name for a record store, because you sell more than five records.
Yes.
And then us trying to be funny and make niche play on words really doesn't help the business model, which is why I went with such a simple name for like this endeavor.
Yeah, I mean, I like the keeping it simple, like people, you can't forget it. And you're the same across all platforms, which helps too.
Yeah, I don't want to shout anybody out or call them out, but the people at Smiling Earth Mushrooms, they thought my name was Colin Sevenths. And they would tell me I needed to put dashes or periods, and I laughed hysterically, and they laughed, and I've been getting called Colin a lot.
That's cool. That's
I guess when funny. You look this Irish, people just think your name's Colin.
That's true. So where were you booking gigs, and what kind of music and all that stuff?
Yeah, I was doing, I guess, a lot of like metal and punk and stuff from New Jersey, and a lot of stuff coming in from out of states.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing, I had a bunch of different venues. I was doing the Freehold VFW, Manasquan Fire, First Aid and Fire Hall on, what is that, 34 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Down in Brick at the Moose Lodge, which I think got flooded in Sandy or whatever storm that was.
Right.
And then a lot of frat houses and punk houses in New Brunswick.
Nice.
So I kind of had a pretty good spread. It kind of made it easier. Certain bands draw better in certain towns. This is kind of before Asbury got as cool as it is now,
because
it was kind of harder to, they didn't really have like House Independence or some of these other clubs, and pretty much you had the old Asbury Lanes, which was in like this weird influx before it went out of business.
And right,
it was like they had booking agents there that very rarely did they let anyone else do shows, so it's really kind of different now. Like playing the show at the Saint like 10 years ago meant like you were playing for like the sound guy.
Right.
And now if you play at the Saint, there's people at the show.
Right. That's pretty funny. So were you cooking at that time too, or were you like full in on trying to get a music career going?
Well, I don't know if I should say this or not, but I pretty much started the record company on like a suspension hiatus from the Culinary Institute of America. I like to party a lot.
Right.
So the similarities with me and Anthony Bourdain are outside of, are we definitely not heroin, but everything else, we share a lot of similarities.
Right.
And so I did that. I booked a tour while I was in school, and then I ended up getting told I couldn't attend class for 6 months, and then I went on the tour down to like Virginia Beach, Roanoke, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and like back to New Jersey.
Nice.
And then there was a second leg I didn't go on to like Connecticut and Massachusetts and like Albany.
So why do you get suspended from culinary? Is it because like your spices are off in the your food preparation?
No, it was like well, so I went to culinary school when I was 17.
Right.
And so it was like, you know, underage drinking and stuff like that, partying. And, you know, I accrued enough demerits that they were like, hey, man, like, we're not going to tell you again. You just keep getting caught, like, partying or throwing a party in a dorm room, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. So you started there when you were 17.
Yeah, that's, I went in the summer.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, I'm a summer birthday.
Right.
So.
Gotcha. That's intense. Yeah. I mean, it's not like partying didn't go down at the Culinary Institute. I told you before, my sister went there. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely logged some hours at the culinary, and, you know, some of the, you know, some wild times for sure.
Yeah, well, it's a huge mix of people too. So like most of my friends when I went, I was like,
yeah, you're 17, probably hanging around with like 50-year-old
20s,
former drug
like
dealers and, you know.
Yeah, there was one guy I hung out with. He owned a bunch of car washes in like Ohio, and then he just wanted to go to culinary school, and he was like 65-year-old man, and
right,
just loved smoking weed.
Yep.
And he was in one of my classes, and he would just invite me over to just hang out and like listen to like classic records. It was really weird. I always thought he was gonna like pull some weirdo stuff. Well, because it's like old enough almost to be like older than like my parents and my uncles and stuff at that time.
Right.
So he was almost like grandfather level.
Gotcha.
Yeah, in my eyes, I guess. Now it's like not that weird.
Yeah, but I mean, my sister was the same. She was like a second, you know, kind of went later in life after she figured out like college wasn't for her, had worked for a while, that kind of stuff. And her friends were definitely a mix of like, there was a dude, definitely in his 50s, she was buddies with. There were like, you know, people like you that were straight out of high school, you know, so it was definitely like way across the board of all different types of people, you know. A lot of people like discovered their passion like as a second career, that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, it was really strange. Me and a good friend of mine, we actually kind of made fun of like the intro of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So like when people would come into class, we had nicknames for everybody. Right. And so we would just like be like, we would mostly people from movies and stuff, you know. But I specifically now am remembering there was this man named Jerry, and he was like a Mexican American guy from like Dallas or San Antonio or something. Mm-hmm. And he was like 40 years old or something. Really nice guy, like the nicest guy in the world. And I'd always be like, yo, man, we should, like, hang out. And he, like, never wanted to hang out.
Right.
Because he's, like, twice my age. Right. I'm like, oh, dude, we're having a party. Like, you want to come? And he's, like, obviously thinking, I'm an adult. I can't be drinking with, like, these, like, 18-year-old kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was always, like, kind of funny at the time. We were like, oh, yeah, Jerry's such a bummer. He never wants to hang out. And then it's, like, he's, like, a 40-year-old man.
Right.
And we're, like, thinking he's, like, a jerk. And it's, like, yeah. He's just, like, worried about, like, getting arrested or something.
Right. Exactly. Turns out he was, you know, had a good head on his shoulders.
No, good guy, though. Really right. Nice guy.
That's funny, man. All right, so probably when they told you to take a little hiatus, they didn't expect you to go on tour, you know, to settle you down, you know?
Well, it was literally, I had one more class before I graduated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was, I had a guy, I don't want to tell the whole story, but pretty much I had a guy come and it was table service and he owned a winery in South Jersey. So I was talking to him, he was inviting me, and then the teacher caught me drinking a swig of the wine before I got rid of it. It was like this whole big thing. Right. It was like really, you know what I mean? It was like, I don't know.
So is that like a Caddyshack?
Yes, but it was to talk about the wine to the guy. Potentially maybe get me a job when I graduated. So
nice.
They didn't see it that way.
That's right. So it wasn't like Spalding and Caddyshack, like sipping cocktails as you walked around the...
No.
The reception.
No, yeah. Well, I went down pretty hard. I didn't take it too well. But
all right. So you ended up coming back to culinary and graduating.
Yeah, I went back 6 months later. I took, like, my final class. I retook the class. They made me in my final class. I graduated November 2009.
Nice.
And, yeah.
And where'd
As much as they taught me, I didn't think about getting a job right away. It was all like, I'm going to book bands, which was really stupid.
Right. So did you, after you graduated, you kept booking bands. Were you working in restaurants or anything at the time?
I actually couldn't. I moved back to New Jersey, and I actually couldn't get hired anywhere. The food scene in New Jersey 11 years ago was super different than it was now.
Right.
You know, so that was part of me relocating back here. You can just go get, like, fresh microgreens and, like, really cool, like, heirloom vegetables and all this stuff now that 10 years ago, restaurants didn't even have that stuff around this area.
Gotcha.
So I remember applying to the Cheesecake Factory.
Right.
And the guy made me come to the interview. I wore like a, you know, business attire coming out of CA. You're always freshly shaved,
mm-hmm.
you know, wearing business attire whenever you're on campus.
Right.
And so I went to this thing. The guy sat down for 3 seconds and was just like, yeah, I'm not going to hire you because like you're not going to like it. And I'm like, I obviously shaved, got dressed, polished my shoes, came to this interview. Like, can you just give me a shot? And the guy was like, nah, I'm good.
Are you serious?
And I think it was more or less he thought I was going to take his job or something.
Right.
At this point, I'm like 19, 20 years old. And I don't know. I just took it not well.
Right.
And then I, you know, I worked like some really odd jobs. Like I worked at like a liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
Worked at Starbucks. Right. And then I got a call to go to the city. I, you know, ended up relocating there and getting a job. So
that's cool. So what was your first gig in the city?
First gig is something I actually really love talking about because it's so odd and that you never meet anyone who's ever worked there.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who dropped out of CIA's father was the chef at Smith & Wolensky's.
Right.
So he went to like India, and I went and I got a job there. It was like a union kitchen. So everyone worked there for like 25 years.
Right.
So it was like pretty interesting to work there and be super young. And
yeah, that's like
the white guy.
Is that a place like are people wearing like the white jackets and serving and stuff like that?
I remember more of like a monkey. Oh no, yeah, they do, because there's two rooms. So there's the grill and then there's the main dining room.
Right.
And yeah, they have those like butcher jackets with the embroidery.
Yeah.
On them, but that Smith & Wolensky's is the only one that's not part of the chain.
Okay.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So, like, they sold all the others to, like, a big company, and they only operate that one, so it's a union.
Nice.
And it's really, really kind of crazy place.
Is it, like, down on Hudson?
No, it's actually in Midtown, so it's on 3rd Avenue and, like, 49th.
I'm thinking of a different
place.
Kind of
by Rockefeller Center.
Okay.
You're probably thinking of Delmonico's.
Hmm.
Really, like the oldest restaurant
gotcha.
Ever.
Okay.
But it's pretty much, it feels like it's the oldest restaurant ever.
Right.
They shot that scene in American Psycho there
nice.
When William Dafoe is upstairs interviewing Christian Bale.
Right.
That's Smith & Wolensky's.
Is it really?
Yeah, there's a bunch of other movies
that's
like
cool.
for sure that were shot there, because like all the celebrities that I cooked for was insane. It was like Entourage was big at the time.
Right.
Like all those guys.
Turtle came in.
Slayer. I remember cooking for Slayer.
No way.
Like every guy on the Knicks, every guy on the Giants. Giuliani when he was cool.
Right. Back
I'm not a political guy, but
what
it was cool to see Giuliani 10 years ago.
And what was your job there? What were you doing?
Oh man, I just opened oysters, sliced cakes, made salads.
Right.
I would do other stuff because I was very eager, but all the cranky old men like really didn't like it.
Right.
They were like, you know what I mean? They're like, you don't get paid as much money as I do, like kinda like chill. So I knew who was like a cool guy, and then I knew who was like the old like grunt, like the union guy who would get upset if you wanted to like learn anything.
Right.
So it wasn't really like the best environment to like grow, but it was like fun to get acclimated to the high volume in New York City. So it's almost like one of those like books you read about chefs and their first like big job and
right
like how they're like, you know, like bright wide-eyed and all that kind of stuff.
Totally. So what did you take from that gig to your next job, and where did you go after that?
Yeah, so pretty odd actually what happened was, because of the union environment, after like 9 months of working there, they wanted me to take unemployment and not work, because I was the newest person to get hired by like 2 years or something.
Right.
So they had to cut my hours completely, and they were telling me just to like hang out, and someone kind of whispered in my ear, there's a place around the corner. So I went to this place around the corner, worked there, ended up working really hard. There was like talks of like promoting me, and then it just kind of never happened. And then there was a really great restaurant around the corner with really crazy chef, this guy Naheed Ahmed, used to work for Grey Coons at L'Espinasse and all these crazy restaurants around the world. And I was like really enamored by this guy.
Right.
So I decided to like kind of tell the people that I wasn't going to wait any longer for the promotion, which I kind of didn't really deserve the promotion. I just worked hard, but I was still really young and didn't know that much. And I went to like this totally different direction for fine dining. But then Sandy happened and a tree fell into the restaurant. It closed, and then my phone rang and they rubbed it in my face. And I went back to the big restaurant and worked for them for like another 2 years.
Wow.
So it was like really, really funny. So I worked hard enough for them to call me and bring me back. And gave me the promotion then.
That's
so
cool.
Sometimes you got to know when to like pick your battles. And I learned so much putting that job on hold and going to this other place and really kind of opened my eyes. And I learned more in probably those like 4 or 5 months before the storm than I learned like probably in like all the rest of my years of working outside of maybe like being in Europe.
Right.
Like it was like really eye opening. There was like things I never even thought about.
That's cool. And what were you doing? How did your responsibility increase during that time?
So pretty much I was just working stations in the one job. And then when I left to go to the fine dining restaurant, it was I went in every day at 11 or 12. It was actually a weird period where I was I'd slept at the restaurant a lot.
Right.
It was that small of a restaurant that probably wouldn't happen today for sure. And pretty much learned how to do every little thing in the restaurant. So that really helped prepare me for when I did get the promotion at the higher volume place.
Right.
Cause I was so used to ordering food, receiving deliveries, putting everything away, being really accountable for every little thing I did, and then not relying on other people to, clean a vegetable or something for me.
Right.
Just knowing taking care of it from when it came in the door till it went on the plate. And just really being exposed to all that was something that now they're really trying to figure out how to reconstruct the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of restaurants you go in, there's a prep cook who makes all your stuff. You kind of come in at 4 or 5 o'clock, bring it upstairs, crank out some stuff, write a list, clean and go home.
Right.
So that's really what they're doing now.
Right.
A lot of places. So it was really nice to work in all these different aspects of the restaurant and see things through all the way. Because there's such an accountability aspect of knowing that you touched everything or you had involvement in everything.
Right.
And so it was a really small crew. I think the kitchen staff was 4 people.
Wow.
Maybe 5, including myself. And so it was being a part of that, you're I don't know. It just makes you really accountable. So then when you go to another restaurant and you're in charge of 15 people at a time or more, you know what I mean? You have this level of care towards everything that really helps you become a leader because everything is important to you.
Right.
Without being a crazy person, but that you learn that later because otherwise you're angry about everything and then people don't want to work with you because they just think you're never going to be happy.
Right.
So it's a really fine line to walk.
That's true. And probably not many people master that balance, you know?
I mean, it took me a really long time. I think it took me until maybe 27, 26 maybe.
Right.
And certain people you ask will say I still don't have it, but I like to think I got it down a couple of years ago.
That's cool. What when did you get your what was the move to get your own restaurant? Become a chef for the restaurant.
Of course, yeah. I didn't really bounce around that much. I worked some pretty long tenures, a minimum of a year in a couple places.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to invest and go to Europe for about, I went for 4.5 months.
Where'd you go?
I worked for a little bit. I went to Geneva, took a train to Lyon, and then I flew down to Barcelona, took a train up the coast, went to Roses, checked out El Bulli. Which wasn't even open at the time, but it was just this mecca of inspiration for me at the time. Went up to the south of France to Béziers, worked for a week and a half at Château de Lignon, which is a really small French villa. I forget whatever rating they have, but it was a pretty nice place.
That's cool.
Went to Bordeaux and Paris and then came home. So it was a nice couple months of just opening and thinking and being alone, you really get to reflect with your thoughts a lot more. So you're not distracted by other people. So it's pretty nice.
And that's cool. And do you have a meal from that time that just you can never forget?
I ate at so many places. I maybe spent $20,000 on this trip. I maxed out every credit card. But I remember I ate at restaurant Paul Bocuse in Lyon.
Right.
And I sat down at the dinner. I was by myself. It's I forget, 400 euros or something. And I was so excited. And the first dish came out, which was a chicken consomme with truffles and a dome, puff pastry lid. And when I opened it up and smelled it and took the first bite, I just started crying. Not excessively crying, but just weeped. In a movie, I just had tears kind of coming down my face.
Right.
And I visibly looked upset because I couldn't believe I was there. I thought I was sleeping.
Yeah.
Because it was something I thought about for so long. And then I couldn't believe I actually did it.
Wow.
And so like really kind of like I was embarrassed. I was like, I had like a $300 bottle of like champagne at the table by myself. And right. I'm just like crying. Like I was like, I'm by myself. Like people must think like my date skipped out on me or right. something. So, but that was really crazy. That was one of the first nice meals I had.
Yeah. That they thought you were there. A food critic.
Yeah. It was like a couple, it was like a day, the day before Valentine's Day or something too, or like that week.
Right.
So I think people thought like I got a divorce made up by myself or something.
That's right.
But it really moved me. And just to hear like these like ancient dishes, like yeah. you're a big baseball buff. It, to me, it felt like seeing like Babe Ruth or Joe DiMaggio play baseball.
Mm, that's cool.
It was just like crazy where I was like, how did I get in this time machine and go to this wacky place on the other side of the planet?
Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate working in the music business and traveling for tours in Europe a lot. especially when you're on tour, you always have a local promoter that's trying to impress you by taking you to the best, you know, what they view as the best restaurants or whatever. So we were fortunate to, you know, eat really well. So like the one meal I think of, and the only reason I think of it the most is because it was so odd at the time. It was in Barcelona, actually. And it was a steak with a pomegranate sauce. And it just like, it was so bizarre, like sounding that I was like, I got to try this. And it was like the most amazing thing I've ever had in my life. I don't know why, you know, it was like, just, it was simple, but just so cool and unexpected to me at the time.
The meat in Spain is pretty good though. Mm. And like then, outside of pomegranate sauce.
Right. Exactly. Like, I never really caught on here. You don't hear that.
Level.
Yeah. And then, you know, I wish I could remember where we were, because there is one meal in Paris one time that was my first real experience with like a meal with like from every course with a pairing of like wines for everything, like down to, you know, cheese courses and all that stuff. Like it was just like fascinating to me how all of that played together. Like that was a pretty cool experience also.
Yeah, I think it had a lot to do with like, I've obviously eaten at restaurants before that in mm-hmm. America before I went, but it has a lot to do with like the services I want to provide in people's homes and with my business model and doing all that. Because mm-hmm. You could probably do like a 4-part mini series with me mm-hmm. about my like trip in Europe.
Right.
Like in the specific odd things I did with food.
Right.
Like the first thing I did was got a gyro in Geneva.
Nice.
Because like I lived in Queens for the 5-6 years before that. And I used to eat one every day.
Right.
Under Queens Boulevard.
How were they?
So that was the first thing I did. It was super spicy.
Right.
It was like 4:30 in the morning. It was like snowing. And I just had a big backpack and I was walking around eating this gyro.
Nice.
It was just like making my eyes weep. And then I went to the grocery store like the next day and bought like horse meat.
I've had horse
and
in Japan, actually.
I cooked some horse for myself.
Wow.
You know, and then later on when I was in Paris, like, my buddies, I met a guy who was a tattoo artist there, and mm-hmm. he decided that he was going to Paris, and we'd link up and hang out again. And he had a joke where he dared me to eat a beef penis at a yakitori spot. And he was like talking in French where he thought I didn't understand it. I knew exactly what was going on. I didn't care.
So you got to know someone's messing with you if they're getting you to eat beef in a yakitori place, though. It was probably chicken penis, I think.
No, it was pretty large. I think it was too big to be a chicken penis.
Rooster.
But rooster. Yeah, I guess. Sorry, the pronouns. Right. But no, it wasn't that bad. It was kind of like calamari or something.
Yeah. I've been
to
one
of those.
But it was
just like a lot of weird stuff, you know?
Yeah. So do you, I mean, I guess I'll just ask and then we'll shift gears to talking about opening your own business. But what are some of your favorite foods and like, what do you, you know, what were you looking for out in your travels? Like, were you chasing particular types of food?
In my travels, I planned my trip pretty well. So I ate at like a crazy amount of like Michelin star restaurants, mm-hmm. like Tickets in Barcelona, Pierre Gagnier in Paris. I actually like ran out of money at one point. I was supposed to eat at Alain Ducasse's place in Paris. And then I ended up meeting him later and I told him his restaurant was too expensive. See, he came to Wolfgang Puck when I was working there. And I said hi. I shook my hand and I said, "Hey, I had to cancel my meal for lunch at your restaurant a couple years ago. It was like so expensive, man. I didn't have $650 for lunch." Because <Right. laughs> the pro tip for anyone in Europe: go to these fancy restaurants and go eat lunch.
Mm. Oh, it's that's like a good one, right?
40% of the entire cost of the dinner, and it's almost the same amount of food.
Yeah,
in most places.
It's like the like our grandparents in Florida, you know, the early bird.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. And it's really chill, and right. It gives you the rest of the day to walk around. And
it's a cool idea.
Yeah, so that's the best way to do that.
Nice. So what were you doing for Wolfgang Puck?
I opened up the restaurant downtown in the Four Seasons when they opened his first New York restaurant, which wasn't reviewed nicely. Mm. There was some comment about the restaurant being designed by someone who wanted it to be sexy but had probably never had sex or something along the lines of Pete Wells, Earl Zinger. So yeah, this was like one of the moves I did after Europe, and that kind of led.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Up to me becoming the chef of a restaurant in Hell's Kitchen. Because I guess like I had enough buzzworthy things on my resume that made me seem more well-rounded than like the steak guy.
Gotcha.
having been at like Keen's and Smith & Wolensky's and places like that. And then I was still pretty young when I got that job. I think I want to say I was around that point where I said I wasn't crazy anymore. So right. I was like 20, 27, maybe 26, 27. And I had my own restaurant for 2 years, which was pretty crazy.
And what was that restaurant?
It's called Kilo Food and Wine. Mm-hmm. It's in Hell's Kitchen. It's like a 40-seat restaurant. And it was kind of like a restaurant that lost its way, where it just kind of like really went downhill when they hired me. And I think the owner like thought I could turn it around.
Right.
And then I turned it around and just like floored the gas pedal to the point where he was always trying to tell me to like take it back. Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't make him money. Like we hit record numbers. We did really well. We got a lot of press write-ups and stuff. But he was like, I always really wanted to do more, and like try to get some accolades or something, which really is like not a healthy mindset to have.
Right.
But I constantly changed the menu and, all that kind of stuff. And, did like 200 different dishes like every year. And
wow.
Every time people would come weekly and the menu would be half different and they'd be excited and order some of the new stuff and make a comment like, "Oh, I really wish this was still there on the menu."
Right.
So it was always kind of funny that as much as people, I would always tell guests, I'm like, "You only miss it because it's not there. Mm. If it was on the menu, you wouldn't order it because you had it last week."
Right.
So it was kind of funny.
It's a tough balance.
I'm sorry.
I said it's a tough balance. You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like I think of so many things in terms of music, but there are a lot of parallels, I feel like, between being a chef and a musician. And, you know, one of those things, it's like, I mean, it's almost like playing your hits, right? It's like everyone expects Skinner to play Freebird. I think Skinner remains like grateful for it, but I think there's plenty of artists that like get sick of playing the same crap and they want to play their new stuff. You know, it's kind of,
yeah, like, it's like when a new album comes out and
right.
They're like, "Oh, it doesn't sound like the last album," or yeah. I'm like, "Why would you want the same album twice?"
Right.
But I think it's, are you familiar with like the history of Weezer?
Yeah.
So he wrote the second album, no one liked it, and he locked himself in a room for like a year with just like a lizard and like cried.
Right.
Like, I don't know, when people are like, "Oh, well, I want the old," I just feel good knowing that they liked the old.
Right.
And then if you see them again after they complained about the old.
Right.
You know that you have enough staying power, or they like the new thing enough to see the third album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They didn't quit on you. It just wasn't as like, didn't have that mass appeal where you couldn't take it off the menu.
And now he's got the last laugh because he's friggin' playing Toto for people. You know what I mean?
Well, I hope I don't get end up. I think starting my own business is so I don't become Weezer. I don't want to be playing Toto. I don't want to be doing the greatest hits. I don't want to be playing half the Blue Album every tour date.
Right.
And making like electro synth pop with whatever DJ Kangaroo or whoever these guys are.
Right.
So I'm trying not to. I think that's a huge part of the punk DIY, what I want to do with my business is to kind of always be evolving and customize all the dinners for every single guest. And you know what I mean? Really be this, like, I don't know, like weird, I almost said virus, but this weird, like ever growing, evolving, like mutation that's like constantly getting better.
Go with fungus. You know,
a fungus?
Yeah, you're a fungi.
I'm a fun guy.
Yeah, exactly. So you picked the perfect time to start a new business, which is like 2019 leading into 2020. How, you know, what was your mindset about starting your business and how did it come about?
So I had a death in the family. That's a good typo negative reference right there. And so I decided to move home to, New Jersey to be closer to my family. Cause, I didn't attend the funeral and I didn't really spend a lot of time with my family in that, instance. And then I felt like, why am I so consumed by everything? Like maybe I need to focus on like other aspects of my life as well. And so I relocated to New Jersey and then I kind of was like, I don't know where I can work or where I want to work. And then I kind of was like, I want to start this business because like I kind of laid out some schematics of how to do public dinners, how to do private dinners, and, you know, tried to figure out like, would this work? And kind of back to what I was saying before with there's some of these restaurants now in New Jersey that are kind of like city restaurants.
Right.
But they're in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And if they can stay open and pay their bills, then if I don't even have a location, then shouldn't I be able to pay my bills? If I don't have a dishwasher, if I don't have a staff, if I don't have a lease.
Right.
So that was a lot of into the planning. And then I wanted to take things that I knew from all my education, training, and career and kind of apply that to my guest experience and my final product that I deliver to the guests, you know.
That's cool. So how many of your special events, dinners had you done like until recently?
I want to say I'm at 15 or 16.
Cool.
I think I was supposed to be in Baltimore yesterday, but that got canceled. I think that was 16. Gotcha. Maybe it was 15.
Right.
But yeah. And I mean, I started in October.
Okay.
So I want to say in December I did 6 dinners.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it was really, really cool. Just trying to keep the ball rolling. And collaborations have been really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like just the fact that people have been receptive enough to be, hey man, like come do dinner here or do a dinner for the supper club I'm starting or at my restaurant. It's been really kind of interesting.
That is cool.
'Cause I have no background in New Jersey really whatsoever.
Right.
I'm not like that guy who knows all the people in the restaurants in New Jersey. So
gotcha.
It's really funny when I come into someone's home and they're like, oh, do you know so-and-so restaurant? And I'm like, yeah, I've eaten there. And they're like, do you know the chef there? And I'm like, I have no idea who that is. And I'm like, it's just so funny to be so disconnected because people take it in a weird way. And I've tried to like really reach out and figure out who these people are in New Jersey. So it's been really cool. There's some really, at least in an email sense, friendly people.
Mm-hmm.
Like social media presence. Like if I go to a restaurant now and like that person is connected with me and they like send me a DM and ask me how it was or whatever, it's pretty interesting.
Right.
Cause that would never happen to me in New York. And I know a lot of people in New York, like maybe they'll send me out a dish or like say hi.
Right.
But like, I don't know. Those are people I've like worked with and stuff.
Right.
And so like to have that happen there isn't weird, but I've never had that happen in New Jersey ever. So like community wise, like New Jersey's been, pretty cool.
Right.
Obviously some people haven't been cool, but
that's cool.
That's a different show.
Yeah, that's right. So once like, coronavirus kicks in and, you know, events are shutting down and all that stuff. What do you do now when that's like the basis of your business?
In all honesty, just got to buckle down the hatches and weather the storm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't have a lot of, you know, funds really sitting around before right. that. You know, so I've canceled a couple dinners. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be doing a private dinner tomorrow that we're just going to change the date.
Mm-hmm.
So
are people still booking private dinners? And like, do you even want to be in that situation?
I don't want to sound super reckless. I haven't cooked. The last dinner I did was on the 12th.
Right.
The public dinner in a restaurant, and this was like the day before, like this was like the day the NHL stopped.
Gotcha.
So that was like really like leading into that dinner. It was like everything was kind of falling around, but the right. restaurant was still open, and restaurants were still open until the other, like last week.
Yeah.
So that wasn't that weird, but it was like really kind of made me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And then once everything got kind of canceled, it's just kind of been strange. I had someone email me last night about a bachelorette party in August.
Oh, really?
I don't feel bad saying that because it's like not too much information, but I think people are looking not in the near future, but I think people are looking at least like 3 months out.
Gotcha.
I would like to hopefully in, you know, 60 days from now, you know, people start booking stuff for, you know, 2 months from now and
right.
kind of see, you know, because obviously everyone can't get tested. I can't like make people get tested because they can't even get it. And then before I go into their house or anything, it just kind of has to be.
Yeah, it's a really weird dynamic. Like I know a lot of a bunch of people in other professions that like, you know, involve being around people or going to see people's homes. And it's like, you know, it's just you start thinking like, is it worth the whatever I'm going to make to do this and be in that situation? And yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to take yeah. into account.
Yeah, no, it is. It is really strange. I think once people know more about it, like how long it lives on a countertop for,
mm-hmm.
or something like that, I think it'll help make better decisions in what to do.
Right.
I'm just somebody who, with the dinner tomorrow, I didn't want to be the person that canceled.
Right.
I was like, it was a really small dinner for only two people, a husband and a wife, mm-hmm. for an anniversary. And I was just like, I reached out last week and I, you know, I didn't want to be the person saying I wasn't going to do it.
Right.
Which sounds really stubborn, but me and two other people isn't like a mass gathering. So I felt like the odds were pretty good.
Right.
Like, I got bit by a dog before my dinner last week. And I had a huge, like, I should have got stitches probably. And I didn't cancel. I, you know, I put a bandage on my arm and
right.
you know, I did the dinner. So I'm just someone who doesn't want to have to cancel. Obviously,
sure.
I don't want to be like spreading a disease. But as far as I know,
right.
I don't have it, and I haven't been cooking. So before anyone slides in my DMs and tells me I'm being irresponsible,
right?
I'm not. But hopefully in the future, I don't want to close the business. That invested a lot of time in building a brand and
mm-hmm.
networking and reaching out to people. I mean,
yeah, and it seems
I'm on
like
the show with you right now.
That's right. Things are looking up, man.
Another publication. Well, everyone wants to talk to me about my crippling failure. I just had a write up for some food company in New Jersey.
Right. They're
interviewing local businesses. And mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I wish I could get press about not all my dinners getting canceled.
Yeah.
I wish
yeah.
I could get more press about upcoming events and right. ways that people could attend.
Well, I think what's interesting to me is like what business owner, and look, I'm in the same situation right now. Like, you know, like business is hard to come by these days. And, you know, I think what's interesting is figuring out how people are dealing with that. Like as a business owner, like, what do you do? And I noticed you're doing, you know, some new stuff on Instagram, like preparing videos and how-to tips. And, you know, it's a great way to keep building your brand. Maybe you're able to do things that you wouldn't have time to do if you were planning a lot of dinners and had other things going on, right?
I have so much time. Yeah, I did a couple dinners right before, demos before we just got on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were suggesting. Sorry. I just ate a spicy chili pepper.
Was that a dry cough?
Yeah, I ate a pickled chili I had next to me. I just popped in my mouth and it made me cough. Don't worry. I'm safe. So I've had more time to do it, but it's just about not, I don't want to become this instructor. I have no desire really to be a continuing teacher.
Right.
But I figured everyone's at home cooking. I don't think I could make anybody a good cook through any of these videos, but if, you know, any of that seeps into your head.
Yeah, you could pick up
going
some...
back to like before, about 10 years ago, you know, there's this continuing information with food.
Mm-hmm.
Guests are so much more educated now than they were in the past, even five years ago.
Yeah. Oh, more yeah, like
the,
totally.
That Portlandia episode where they want to know the name of the chicken.
Right.
That you're serving them. His name was Harry. He lived a good life.
That's right.
You know, which is fine about being responsible to an extent. You know, obviously there's so many great places now here that you want to, you know, I want to have vegetables from Drop the Beet Farm. So I want to have microgreens from, there's like three different places in Freehold that have microgreens, Hometown and Beyond Organics. It's crazy, like,
cool.
That I have to even like rotate these people in to like support multiple businesses.
That's pretty,
you know,
wild.
What I mean? Like, I can't even imagine. I couldn't have imagined that like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right. I wonder.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You know, one thing, it's cool. Like, could you do a dinner for people like that? Maybe you just hop on a Zoom call with them, and instead of you being there to prepare it, you talk them through it in the kitchen or something. You know, there might be like weird alternatives to keep interacting with people. I know you don't want to be an instructor, but you know, just.
Yeah, I just don't know. You're going to make me double down on saying that I've managed my personality and anger a couple years ago if I had to do that.
Let's see you prove it, man.
I'd have to be like, no, and then scream really loud into the computer microphone until it exploded.
That's right. Well, I mean, look.
End up making the hardcore music more.
I mean,
so.
You know, if Gordon Ramsay can control his temper to instruct people, I'm sure you can too, right?
Well, if I had $160 million in the bank, I'd be smiling a lot more than I currently smile. Because I don't think I'm like a person who's in a bad mood.
Right.
But, you know, there's something, I don't know. I think educating people is a lot like being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I have on the table,
yeah.
Or something I foresee myself doing in the future.
Right.
So I feel like when it comes to instructing, it seems like, no. I saw a Kevin Hart stand-up thing the other day where he's like, no. And I just, you know, he's like, who wants to do that all day? You know, I don't know. I'm definitely someone who doesn't want to do that all day.
Right.
The most I can do is tell my cat to like stop scratching my $1,000 mattress whenever he feels like doing it, and I'm already tired of that. I'm thinking about like giving the cat away.
That's right.
No, I love the cat. I could never give him away.
All right, that's good.
I hope his snoring isn't recorded in the audio.
He's not watching you with great interest.
No, he fell asleep. I hope everyone listening to this isn't asleep. This dude. I wish I could send you a picture.
Yeah, I didn't have my act together enough to do this on video as well, so we're just strictly audio this time. But we'll do that another time. So tell me, what do you do in your free time, like for hobbies? I know you love music. Who are some of your go-to bands? You sent me one earlier. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was listening to your show, and then I actually used to book that guy's other bands.
Oh, really?
It used to be a straight edge band called Breakaway, mm-hmm. And I did a show for them in Brick once or twice. Now he's in that band I sent you. Music-wise, for me, I'm kind of all over the place with, like, music. But, you know, I really like this band, Twitching Tongues. Mm-hmm. I think they're in a couple of my – they kind of sound like a newer Type O Negative.
Right.
I think I wear their T-shirts a lot on accent in some of my videos. I like a lot of – well, I like a lot of music. Music keeps me occupied. Mm-hmm. Really like 108.
Right.
Like a Hare Krishna band. I think we spoke about them once.
Mm.
you know,
who's in, I don't remember one of, are they newer or are they an older?
No. So, Zach De La Rocha was in Inside Out.
Right.
And then he left to do Rage Against the Machine, and all the guys from Inside Out moved to New York, and they got this guy from New Jersey, and they started this Hare Krishna band. So they're like the true not sellouts playing Coachella. They're like all like sex is suffering and don't eat animals and don't drink alcohol and still very angry.
That's funny.
Somehow.
I mean, I used to be
enlightenment.
In a prior life, worked with a lot of like Krishnakur bands from back in the day, like Shelter and what was the other one I was telling you about? Baby Gopal. There was like, you know, there was obviously a lot of different bands around, and all those dudes jumped from different band to different band, and the New York scene around those days, you know?
Yeah, no, it is really, really wild. Like, for me to talk about music is like almost like a whole episode as well. Mm. But I guess my hobbies are definitely like going to shows, trying to do more in New Jersey, go to more shows in New Jersey. My partner just lives in Brooklyn still, so I'm kind of in the city a lot.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of plan my trips around going to see a band or or something. So she always makes fun of me for that. She's like, "You coming to see me or are you coming to see that band?" I'm like, "Both, both." I mean, I try to work when I'm in the city too.
That's cool.
But hobbies, big hockey fan, big Flyers fan. It was really crushing that they stopped the season.
Oh, yeah. You got a lot of hockey cards, don't you?
Yeah, I have a really big John LeClair collection. A lot of people make fun of me for it.
What's
I have like
your,
30 vintage starter shirts, like all from the 90s, with like cartoon characters of like the Legion of Doom and stuff on them.
Nice. You have an Instagram for that?
I do, but I don't want people checking it out. I'm sure if you type John LeClair into Instagram, not a lot of stuff comes out. But I proudly boast that I have the largest collection in the world. I have no shame.
I have come across that before somewhere on Instagram. I saw those. You're looking.
Yeah, because it's linked to my phone number. So if you have my phone number, it probably pops up in the algorithm at some point of like people you may know or something.
That's funny.
A lot of people have found it and been like, "What is this?
So
is
you
that
still?"
You? And I'm like, "Yeah."
Yeah. So you still on the hunt for hockey cards?
Well, financially right now, not really, but, I'm like, what I even need is super rare, but the community that they have in collecting is really good.
Right.
So I have people send me stuff like all the time as gifts. There's a guy, I'll shout him out, Greg Cox. He lives in Washington state. He works on the railroad for like Amtrak and all these companies. He's like an engineer, and he sent me almost every Carter Hart rookie from last year.
Wow.
And these are like these are like money cards. These are like couple hundred dollar cards.
Really?
And he just keeps mailing them to me because he doesn't want them.
No way.
When he could easily just list them on eBay and make like $300,
right.
He just mails them to me.
That's cool.
So I actually have a pretty good Philadelphia Flyers collection of recent players that I've inherited for free, pretty much.
That's sick. Email that dude anything in return?
Yeah, I find him some stuff, but dude, I'm at like I maybe sent him $70 worth of stuff.
Right.
He's probably sent me like $3,000.
That's pretty funny.
So
man.
I have a lot of, but he's just a good dude. He's just you know, a cool guy.
Right.
And I've met a lot of people like that, and I've done as much as I could to like help out people.
That's cool.
So it's a really interesting community. It's like really, really about like going back to 108 and Krishna. It's really about giving, and then somehow it finds its way back to you because you really never know when something's gonna surface.
Right.
On the market.
That's really cool.
You know, or what you're going to find at like a weird small town sports card expo.
Right.
You find something that there's like four copies of, you pick it up and mail it to somebody, that person's going to love you to death.
That's cool, man.
My third typo negative joke I've made now.
My typo like knowledge is very limited. Like Christian woman was like my go-to, and I never really got that into typo negative beyond that. Like,
I will forgive you because you do not know what you have done. That's the beginning of Christian woman, by the way. Yeah, forgive her, for she does not know what she has done.
That's right.
I mean, sorry.
I love
I'm not, like,
that
big
tune.
Of a fan, even like I like Peter Steele. I like the band,
right.
But you know, it's just like. Something about that tape getting destroyed. It's like in my head, it's like all I can think about. And all I can think about is doing that the SNL intro voice for everything I want to say. I have to hold it back. Right. Like, Evan Bomber. It's like all I've been thinking about this whole phone call.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I used to work with a dude, Pete, and he was the biggest Type O Negative fan. And he had a band that like basically was just like, you know, him, his version of Type O, like trying to get a deal or whatever. It was funny.
I think they play now, but with like a guy who looks like Peter Steele.
Right.
And I think it's the same band. I'm not really sure. They're called, I forget, like it's a joke on Carnivore or something. Carnivore AD.
Okay.
And I think they mostly play Carnivore songs.
Do they?
But it's really odd. I don't know. They've been playing some of the bigger metal fests.
That's cool.
I don't know if I'd be interested in seeing it, but I mean, good for them, I guess.
Yeah, you got to keep it rolling, man. All right, cool.
I'm at that age now where I've seen so many bands with like replacement members because like somebody's died. Mm,
totally.
And you're like, you still want to kind of experience it, but it is kind of, if it's for like a good cause, it's always like, oh, okay.
Right.
But it's the, now that you think about how many bands you've like, I've seen that have done that, it's like kind of crazy. It makes me feel like an old man.
Yeah, I read something a while ago that like a lot of bands were actually viewing the band as like that type of business model, basically saying like, you know, the band is this business that will go on in eternity with like new members, you know, playing the old shit and all that stuff. So it is weird. I don't know. To me, like I'm so connected to like certain personalities, you know what I mean? That I, you know, I don't really care to go see, like for me, my hero growing up was Ace Frehley. So like, to go see Kiss now without Ace, like it doesn't do it for me really, you know, like, I mean, I probably would, but you know, so I think for some bands, like you're always connected to certain people, like, you know, it's like seeing Van Halen without Eddie, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I can see that for sure. Right. One of my favorite bands is called Self Defense Family.
Right.
And it's all based around this one guy. And I listen to his podcast and all this stuff. This dude like consumes my life. Like this guy, Patrick Kinlan, I can't escape him. My girlfriend's like, you talk about this guy so much. Cause I listen to all his, he's on three different podcasts.
Really?
And then like, he has that band and then all the members change every album.
Right.
And like, he's like such like a personality. Mm. Like he's like a Twitter, what's the word where you're like a troll.
Right.
And like, he's just like this like person, a very opinionated person. Mm. And so like, granted, I, you know, it just really ties itself together, but I'm never going to knock a band if it's not like all original members or something. Like Turning Point played a show, I don't know, for like some charity or something like 5-6 years ago, and a different person sang every track. Like it had a different guest vocalist because the singer died in like 1994 or something.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, we want the new generation of kids to like hear this band, be able to like jump off speakers and like see it live. And that's going to get people into it more so than like a YouTube video of like really bad quality from like a VHS from like 1992 in a basement.
Totally. I mean, there's definitely times where it works for sure. I mean, I'm not going to totally rule it out. All right. So I'm going to check out Self Defense Family. 108. I'll fire that up. A little Twitching Tongues.
I'll make you like a romantic playlist.
Sweet.
I can go off the rails of listening bands like Cold World, big in the Cold World.
Right.
War Hungry. My t-shirt's actually like a rip on a War Hungry shirt.
That's nice.
Ripping on a War Zone shirt.
I've got a War Zone shirt actually. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'll buy it off you.
I'll find it. That was my favorite shirt ever. It was like my one long sleeve t-shirt. It was like a black War Zone shirt. Yeah.
I got to get you to get me that before you find out you can sell it on eBay for like $400.
It's really funny is like t-shirt stories. I think there was a band and I don't want to say the wrong band, but I'm pretty sure it was, I want to say it was Nevada Beach. And like they thought they made it because like a dude was wearing their t-shirt in a porno. So like they were like so ecstatic, like, dude, we've arrived, man.
There was something called the Bridge Nine Records, like they had a forum on the internet in the 2000s. And there was a whole thread always of like band posters or band t-shirts and pornos.
Oh, right. That's really funny.
And it was always a very funny thread because a lot of the people in the bands were on the forum. And would make jokes and stuff, especially if it was like, you know, a really weird porno.
Right, right. Totally.
And and also, I guess while we're on this topic, if you think my shirts are cool that I wear, I literally just sold a whole mess of t-shirts to the Asbury Wave in Asbury Park, the thrift store.
Oh, did you really?
I like pretty much almost donated them.
Right.
But I mean, you should still pay whatever, you know, that shop's really cool. Mm. So if you're ever like, now he started posting them and now I'm like feeling like all nostalgic where I'm like, oh man,
I wish I had that back.
I went on like my first date and wore that t-shirt in like middle school.
That's killer.
Yeah. You know, so that's a cool shop though.
That is cool. Check that out. All right. So Matt, we're going to wrap it up here. I encourage people to follow you on Instagram and interact at Chef Collins Events. Look for your website at chefcollinsevents.com. Any special requests, things people can do for you right now?
No, check out what I'm doing. Tell a friend if they're like a foodie, or maybe pick up a t-shirt.
Cool.
I'm always on online for the most part.
Cool.
I'm always interacting.
And you taking
how to cook something.
You taking reservations like for future events right now? So like, I know you got a bachelorette party. So it's like if someone wanted to do, I got a, you know, birthday in September, they could book it up right now, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Typically I need about 3 weeks in advance, to lock everything in, make sure I can get everything, get you to approve a menu, et cetera.
Right.
So typically like, you know, receive the deposit. So typically I don't book anything before that, like short notice. I mean, you could try, but so, you know, hopefully if something you reach out to me by the time you hear this podcast and you want something a month later, hopefully we're in the financial clear. We're letting the dust settle at that point.
Yeah, let's hope so. For sure. All right, Matt, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Evan.
All right, you got it, man. Check out Matt once again at Chef Collins Events and follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer. Thanks for checking out this episode of the Mulletcast.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.